Want to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition? With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins and minerals to help you start your day. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, nervous system, energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Athletic Greens uses the best of products based on the latest science. Just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/emerging. Again, athleticgreens.com/emerging to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Welcome to the History of North America. I'm Mark Vinette. The glorious era that was Tudor England helped shape the early exploration and colonization of the North American continent. Join me as we continue a deep dive into Tudor England and its great transatlantic explorers. As the Tudors prepare to explore and settle in America, the battle rages on to determine if the colonization will be done under the Catholic or Protestant banner. On a recent fact-finding trip to southern England, I went in search of Queen Elizabeth I. Jewelry was one way that Elizabeth showed her relationship with her mother. Anne Boleyn, Henry VIII's second wife, was said to have three pendants of initials, the letters A, B, and AB. The B necklace is the most famous and is in portraits displayed at the National Portrait Gallery and Hever Castle. The AB is perhaps in a less famous painting, one not completely authenticated as Anne, and is referred to as the Nidhall portrait. There are only two recorded times when Elizabeth mentioned her mother in public. One was when she was 20 and hinted to the Spanish ambassador that she was disliked by Mary because of the distress her mother had caused. The second was when she informed the Venetian ambassador that her mother would never have cohabitated with the king without the ties of matrimony. Is this anemic display evidence that she did not have any feelings for her mother, or that she did not want to be associated with Anne? Probably not. It would not have been politically wise for Elizabeth to be linked too often and too closely with Anne Boleyn, so one can understand the lack of mention by an aware and intelligent child. This did not mean complete elimination of connections, and when she was more secure as queen, several examples are in evidence of her identification with her mother, although the earliest example comes when she was about 10, when she wore the A necklace in the painting, The Family of Henry VIII. Supposedly, this was one of Anne Boleyn's initial pendants that was inherited from Elizabeth's mother. And now, let's resume our travelogue in search of Queen Elizabeth. Our next mission is to discover the places of birth and death of Her Majesty, Good Queen Bess. In need of directions to Greenwich, I searched my GPS for the Palace of Placentia, near the old Royal Naval College. My trusty navigator suggested I remain on the south side of the Thames River. I got directions to the college, but the satellite did not give me anything for the palace. But that was okay, the palace doesn't exist anymore. Although prepared for another drive-by visit, I grinned, thinking, who knows, anything can happen. The Palace of Placentia was an English royal palace built on the banks of the River Thames, downstream from London. It was demolished in 1660 to make way for a planned new palace. Nearly 40 years later, however, the Greenwich Hospital was built on the spot instead. It is now the Old Royal Naval College, the architectural centerpiece of Maritime Greenwich near the Royal Observatory, keeper of Greenwich Mean Time. The palace was the birthplace of King Henry VIII in 1491 and was his favorite residence, thus figuring heavily in his life. The palace was called Placentia by the king because it was pleasant to live in. Henry participated in the many jousting tournaments held on the grounds. Following Henry's marriage to his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, Placentia became the birthplace of his first daughter, Mary, in 1516. After Henry's marriage to Anne Boleyn, Elizabeth was born at Placentia in 1533. The king married his fourth wife, Anne of Cleves, there in 1540. A tree in Greenwich Park was known as Queen Elizabeth's Oak, in which she was reputed to have played as a child. Upon arrival, I got out of my car to view a historic marker on the site of the former palace. Then, bathing in the warmth of the late morning sun, I walked across the park to a rather decrepit, unimpressive oak tree. The huge tree dated back to the 12th century and had strong links to the Tudors. Henry VIII once danced around the ancient oak tree with Anne Boleyn, and years later, Queen Elizabeth often took refreshments whilst relaxing in its shade. Although the tree died in the 1800s, the patchwork of ivy that had grown around it had held it upright for well over a century. In fact, the tree stood all the way up until the 1990s, when a heavy rainstorm brought it tumbling down. Apparently, the soil that had been propping up the broken-down old oak was washed away, thus leaving the dead tree free to fall back to earth. Reading about the tree's long story on the various stelas, I became even more impressed with the fact that the tree was still there, albeit at a rather horizontal angle and covered in an eclectic variety of bugs and fungus. Having completed an enlightening visit of the birthplace, I was back on the road and moving ever closer to central London for a drive-by viewing of Richmond Palace, another Tudor royal residence on the Thames. It was erected about 1501 by Elizabeth's grandfather, King Henry VII of England, formerly known as the Earl of Richmond. Richmond Palace was a favorite home of Queen Elizabeth, who died there in 1603. Surrounded by her privy councillors and bishops, Elizabeth breathed her last at the age of 69 in the early hours of March 24th. Confident of a hard-earned place in heaven, she slowly slid away from earth. According to the royal chaplain, it was a good death, as Her Majesty departed this life mildly like a lamb, easily like a ripe apple from the tree. The question of succession had been an issue for the Queen's government from the moment she came to the throne. Her advancing age heightened these concerns, but Elizabeth refused to address the matter. Many believed that Elizabeth's cousin and godson, King James of Scotland, Protestant son of Mary, Queen of Scots, whom Elizabeth had executed, had the best claim to the throne. In the end, James did succeed Elizabeth as sovereign, finally uniting the crowns of England and Scotland. Richmond Palace remained a residence of the kings and queens of England for the next 150 years. During the 1650s, however, it was largely demolished, the stones and timbers being reused as building materials elsewhere. Only vestigial traces now survived, notably the gatehouse. The area between Richmond Green and the Thames revealed a few other remaining sections of the Tudor structure, later made into a private residence and not open to the public. Throughout my travels, I saw roses everywhere, in emblems, on textiles, flags, and now a stone rose emblem on the top of the gate. I looked up at the rose insignia to admire the Tudor rose. When the Lancastrian Henry Tudor took the crown of England from the Yorkist King Richard III at the Battle of Bosworth Field in 1485, he brought an end to the War of the Roses between the House of Lancaster, which used the badge of a red rose, and the House of York, which used a white rose. To properly appreciate the Tudors, one must understand that Henry VII won his kingdom at the point of a sword and picked up his newly won crown from the mud of a battlefield. Henry's father was Edmund Tudor, from the House of Richmond, and his mother was Margaret Beaufort, from the House of Lancaster. Early in 1486, he married Elizabeth of York to bring all factions together and reign as Henry VII, henceforth using the badge on the gate of a red rose enclosing the white, a unified red and white rose. Although there's not much left at the palace, and the few remains on private property can't be visited, I knew that Queen Elizabeth was at this palace when her health began to fail. Then, she died here. I just wanted to soak it all in. The air, the vibe, the history. Sometimes my mind needs to travel back. It helps. Reading, listening, watching, exploring are all great, but sometimes just sitting still, quiet, can be just as effective, just as good. That's why I often go to cemeteries and sit. Just sit. I got out of the car and stood facing the gate and channeled the past and the great queen at the epicenter of my mission. When Elizabeth I of England died at Richmond Palace on March 24, 1603, it was an occasion of universal mourning throughout the kingdom. It was believed at the time that with her death, she took one step closer to the angels. For some days, the body lay at Richmond and then was brought by barge to London's Whitehall Palace to lie in state. Thousands of Londoners turned out to see her funeral procession to the Abbey on April 28th. The long stream of mourners wound its way to the Abbey. The event was described at that time by a man who attended Elizabeth's funeral and later wrote, "There was such a general sighing, groaning, and weeping, as the like hath not been seen or known in the memory of man." Next time, we explore England's great age of North American discovery during the Tudor period, known as the Elizabethan Age. Check out the YouTube version of this episode, which has accompanying images. I'm Mark Vinette, and I hope you're enjoying the ride.